Okay, we're holding on Daf Nun Aleph.
That's amazing.
And we were in the middle of the sugya about collection for mizonot and parnasah. Yesterday we saw that according to Shmuel we can actually go according to the das of the father when it comes to parnasah, and then that would mean that it's irrelevant whether it's whether metaltalin or the karka. It's basically what it is that we are sham. For mizonos, on the other hand, we were talking about normally the collection from metaltalin, and we ended up discovering that we didn't particularly like any of the takonas that were supposedly there. So we're on the second line. Now, hu yatom v'yatoma da'atu l'kami d'rova. So there was a brother and sister who had been orphaned, who came to Rava, and they were trying to get the metaltalin out of the hands of the trustee to provide for the atoma as well. Omar lohu Rava. So Rava told the trustee, "Ha'aluli yatom b'shvil yatoma, give sufficient money to the yatom that he can also support his sister." Amri le Rabbanan le Rava, "V'amarhu di'amar min b'karkoi v'melo min metaltalin." I thought you were the source of the psak halakha that we only collect from real estate, bein le mizone, bein le ketuva, bein le parnasa. Whether you're talking about mizonot, which is what we're talking about here, whether talking about the collection of the actual ikra ketuva, or whether we're talking about parnasa in terms of providing for marriage, it's all only from mikarkoi. Now, even though lemaisa Rava we know from elsewhere does not argue on Shmuel, Tosis points out that we'd have to be talking about in this case where we had no indication of the ratzon of the father. Since we don't have an indication, we can't jump to the conclusion that we can take it out of the talmud. But meanwhile, Tosis brings an extraordinary note that because of the fact that Bizman Hazeh, Ksuva, and Mizonas are always taken from Metaltali because of the Takanat HaGaonim that I discussed yesterday, that has created a psychological and social pressure in which people feel that they can't distinguish anymore between Metaltali and Mekarkoi, and therefore we have an Umdana without the Shuma of the Das of the Father that undoubtedly, like anybody else, the assumption is that he would be using his bank account. It's very much the way we think today. We don't think really in terms of real estate. We think just simply in terms, unless we're dealing with a real estate chov, it's a mortgage on a home and so on, or we specifically mortgage something. But generally speaking, we view a debt as being something that would be paid from the talmud and would be taken out of our bank accounts with electronic transfer. The same thing would be true nowadays, as does this when it comes to the collection, Rava would be per se. Yeah?
What's the fact pattern here? Why is this, what's the fact pattern? What's going on here? Why is this an issue? Is the kid so small, is concerned that he'll sue the guardian later on for giving...
No, the question is what the guardian has a right to do. The guardian can only respond to what the law is, obviously. So if the rights, after that, remember, the yatoma is not an heir. And we're talking about now a minor, the male who is the heir is a minor. So the question over here is, he wants. What the whole reason why we have a guardian is because we don't care what he wants. We care what he needs. And in this case, we're attempting to take money because he's asking the guardian to give him money for something that's not legally supposed to be paid out. That's the whole purpose of a guardian, is to make sure that that money is kept in trust for him and not given to his whims and desires. So on the surface, when he would come here and ask for money because he wants money for his sister, we'd say, look, you know, when you grow up, you can decide what you want to do with your money. Right now, there's no legal lien on this money to be given for your sister. And there's no reason why we should give it. So therefore, we asked Rava, why did Rava tell the guardian to release funds for this kind of... By the way, this happens all the time nowadays with where you have a guardian. And there's all types of suits that go on all the time.
The guardian is concerned about being sued later on by the heir.
He doesn't have to be concerned for being sued. He has to be concerned for doing what's right. He doesn't have a right to release money. That's stealing. That's his whole purpose. It's only nowadays that there's no moral sense, and the moral sense is defined by being sued. That's why you're thinking this way. But it used to be that you didn't steal because it was wrong to steal, not because you would get sued. Although there are things to be said for the sue business, but we'll talk about that when we get to Nazik. In any event, they asked Rava, why are you releasing this money? Omar lohu, so he said, look, suppose the boy would have wanted a shifcha l'shamsho. He needs a maid. He's a kid. He's living alone. He's taking care of him. So if you would have asked the court to release funds for a full-time maid, wouldn't we have given him that money? So he's got his sister. That's even better. So Koshigin, how can he get tied around? Now he's going to have not only his sister there, who's going to take care of him, but meanwhile the father would certainly be nature that the person who's taking care of him should be the sister, be able to continue to live off of the estate as her salary. So it's great. So why in the world shouldn't we do this? I mean, you got to use your brains. It's not all a question of what's written in the print over here. Toner Rabbi. Echad nechasim sheyesh lem achrayut ve'echad nechasim she'ein lem achrayut motzi'in lemazon isha ulvanot divrei Rebbe. The Rebbe contradicts all of our assumptions from before, and he says that actually we would collect, whether it's from real estate, and remember that the way we refer to real estate in the Gemara is property which has a guarantee. And that's the meaning of real estate, that even if somebody would come and exercise a lien against it, and you would be left without the field that you paid good money for, the achrayut is what is called in modern terms title insurance. And that way, if anything happens to your title, and it turns out you didn't know about a lien, the seller always covers the title insurance, actually. He's the insurer, according to the rule of the Gemara. So that if it's taken away, you have recourse to collect. That's called achrayut. Nechasim she'ed lehem achrayut is, by definition, chattel that has no insurance, because there's no title. And for that, normally we fought until now that we're not motzi'in. Here it says we are, according to Rebbe, motzi'in, even for mazon isha ulevanot. So it says Rebbe Shimon ben Elazar omer, nechasim she'yesh lehem achrayut, if you're talking about real estate, then indeed motzi'in levanot. We would take out from banot min habanim. So let's say the boys have inherited, and we now want the girls to be able to have what they need for their mizanot or parnasa. We will take it away from the heirs, the males, to give to the females. Yeah, but there's only if it's real estate. We would take levanot min habanot. What might have happened over here is a man died leaving a family of daughters, and the older daughters went and they took over the property, and now the little ones are suing. Well, what we would do is we wouldn't take out money for mizonot, obviously, because there's no mizonot banot, or not mizonot min habanot, because banot are heirs. Why would they be mizonot? But the moment that the ktanot go to court and say we don't have enough for our needs, the court will interfere and make sure that the money is equitably divided between the heirs. Then they'll appoint a trustee, and the trustee will use the money of that girl to pay for all of her needs. But there's certainly no inyan of the older women being responsible for the younger sisters. I mean, but on the other hand, obviously they can't take over the property and do as they wish. That's what it means, the banot ben abanim. So we're using things in different ways here. If you take the banot ben abanim, that means parnasah. Or mezonot. You take banot min abanot means we'll split it. You take banim min abanim also means we'll split it. That's, you have a number of males, a couple of little kids. They're not happy with the crumbs that the older brothers are giving out to them. They go and they sue. The court intervenes and says, forget about the crumbs, baby. We're taking away the estate and splitting it properly and giving it over to a trustee for the younger ones. Ula banim min habanot bin achasim merubim. Now, if there's sufficient money to go around, and remember, the halacha is that the banot are nizonot first before the males. So if there's sufficient money to go around, and the daughters now have taken over the money, and the youngsters are coming and they want, the males are saying, we want money, we'll take away from them, assuming that there's enough to cover the parnasa of the nizonot of the banot. We will certainly not take the money away from the females if there's insufficient funds to care for both them and the males. The females come first. Nechasim she'ein lehem achrayut. But if you're talking about chattel, metaltalim, where there's no title, so then motzi'in levanim min abanim levanot min abanot. Obviously, if you're an heir, you have a right to sue for your piece. Basically, that's what it boils down to when you're asking for mazonot. And we'll take levanim min abanot, because the truth is that there's no din of parnasa or mizonot when it comes to metaltalim. So that means that they took it illegally. Avalo levanot min abanim. But we will not take mizonot from male heirs if all that there is a bank account. Ve'afagav the kaimlon. And you should know that even though normally the psak, the gidrei psak, force us to paskin like Rebbe Michaveiro, so where there's a machlokus between Rebbe and another singular shita, like Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar in this case, we would normally paskin like Rebbe. However, in this case, halachak Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, we paskin against Rebbe, and we paskin like Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar that you can only collect from real estate. D'yomar Rava, this is because we have the later psak of Rava, hilchata mi mikarkoi v'lo mi mitautali, bein lichtuva, bein lemizone, bein lefanasa, the psak of Rava that we just spoke about a few minutes ago.
Rebbe?
Yes, sir.
Is an oil well metaltalim in a karka?
An oil well?
Yeah, the oil coming out of it.
The oil coming out of it is metaltalim, like any other papyrus.
And a diamond mine would come out of the same heading?
If there's no title and it's a movable chattel, it doesn't matter whether it's made out of carbon that has been put into the shape of a diamond, or carbon that's been put into the shape of coal.
Diamond mine, and they're still
the mine is around. Definitely a piece of real estate.
Okay.
Are we ready to go? Loka tavla ketuva. Suppose a person did not write a ketuva at all. Now, the Gemara's assumption at this point is that he made a condition with her. She's mochelet ketuva. He's going to take her without a ketuva. Nonetheless, a betula is gova matayim, and the almana is money, because the din of the ketuva does not require a shtar. A ketuva is a given because it's a tnai beidin that any marriage has a ketuva automatically. Katavla sadeh shaveh mana takat matayim zuz. Suppose, instead of writing in the ketuvah, I'm giving you matayim zuz in the event of our divorce, I'm giving you such a chatzer field that he defines, but that field is actually only worth 100 out of the 200. And lo katavla, he did not write kol nechasim de'itli achra'in v'arva'in lektuvatech. He did not write the standard version of the ketuvah, which says, all property that I own are leaned towards payment of your ketuvah. Nonetheless, he's chayev, which we take to mean, nonetheless, he's chayev, and the lien exists, and she can collect it from even mekarka'in that had been bought by somebody. That means that she's gova min ha'lekuchot, because obviously that's the point of a lien on real estate, is that you can take it out of someone who purchases it or creates a lien on it after your lien, right? That's always the rule. Again, this is because Shulut Tanai Beit Din. We don't need him to say or write anything. This is built into the nature of marriage. Lo katavla, furthermore, there's other things which are part of a ketubah, which some people actually write and some people don't write. So if he didn't write one of the tnae ketubah, which is, im tishtaboi, this is the standard language now, this is the form of the tnae Beit Din. Im tishtaboi, if you are captured, afrakinech o tvinech li leintu, I will pay your ransom and take you back as my wife. Of course, the Kohenet, someone married to a Kohen, he couldn't write that because he cannot take her back as a wife. But he should say then, the Girsa in the Ketuvah of the Kohenet is, Im Tashtaboy Afrikinech, and instead of writing Viotvinech Lileinto, you close the clause by saying, Adrinech Lemedinatech, I will bring you back at my expense to where you came from. In other words, I'll take you back to your family home. Even though I'm not allowed to marry you, I'll still see to you. I'm going to leave you in the middle of nowhere here where we moved to Timbuktu. I'll send you back to Borough Park. So even if he didn't write that, he would still be chayav. Shehu tnai beit din. Nish beit, chayav livdota. So if she is captured, he has to now be poda her, and he cannot say, you know what, I got a better idea. Here's the get, here's your ketuvah, you go pay for your own pity. So I want out. He can't do that, because this is not like mizonot. Mizonot is an ongoing chov. So obviously at any point that there's a divorce, he can say, okay, here's your money, and I don't owe you anything. I'm paying your ketuvah. You've become too expensive to maintain. But this is an insurance policy. It'd be very cute if an insurance company could come and say, okay, take back everything you've paid in. You've only been on us for 2 months. And pay your own debts. I mean, that's what he's trying to do over here. Once she's already nishbeit, he can't get out of it by now giving her a get. The fact that she was captured has triggered his chiyuv for tashlumim, no matter what he does.
Even if it goes above the value of the
debt. Obviously, that's the point. And lakta, furthermore, if she becomes ill, chayav l'rafotah, he has to take care of her, because rifuah is no different than mizonot. Part of care for a person is caring for their physical needs, whether those needs are vitamin pills or medications or food. So therefore, he would have to take care of her. However, under those circumstances, Omar Hare Gita Uktuvatat Raperet Atzma, if he says, look, I got a better idea, I'm going to divorce her and pay her ketuvah and let her take care of herself. Since this is a din in mizonot, reshai, he's allowed to do that because he's not chayv in mizonot once he divorces her. There's a number of important issues that this is nogea. First of all, the question is, what about catastrophic illness? Is this true only for, let's say, she's able to take care of herself, she just needs antibiotics or whatever. So, I mean, here there are rishonim that say that in a case of catastrophic illness, that's included as insurance, and that once it's triggered, he can't get out of it. But it's not an ongoing mizonot. So if she is now stuck, basically, in bed and can't care for herself, then we view that as being a chiyuv that's triggered, not an ongoing chiyuv. And he can divorce her, but it doesn't potter him from the care. There's also another diuk. No. There's also another diyuk here, which some of the Rishonim make, that it's mashma, that if he does not have the money to pay the ketuvah, he can't say haregita. Although there's obvious objections to the diyuk here, the ketuvah is he's saying, the pashtus is he's saying, here's the ketuvah because of the fact that he owes her something, so he's saying, let the ketuvah cover it. But if you think about it, he doesn't owe her anything unless it's ongoing. If he already owed it, so then of course he's going to have to pay it, right? If it was yesterday's medicine, of course he has to pay yesterday's medicine. That's like yesterday's food. He can't say, here's your ketuvah, pay for yesterday's medicine. So therefore, when he's saying, harei ketuvata, he's saying, this is for tomorrow's medicine. But he doesn't owe her tomorrow's medicine if he divorces her. So why can't he just divorce her and let her come and collect the ketuvah? So you see from here, that is the Rashba, if you don't have the money to pay for a ketuvah, you can't give a divorce. The klal. Because you don't give a divorce and then let her sue and do her best to get a ketuvah out of you. So that according to him, the ksuva is actually a tnai in your ability to exercise a divorce from your runs. Now, the first part of the Mishnah seems to be going according to Rabbi Meir, because it says over here that no matter what the circumstances, and again, as Tosis points out, we're assuming that those circumstances include his having discussed with her mechila on the ketuvah. So that's why he didn't write it. That is not good enough to pater him for anything. Now, that's Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir Shita is the Omar Kol Apochit Lebetulami Mataim Al Almanami Mana Harezo Beilat Znut. There is no way, no matter how much she agrees, no matter how you try to hide it, there is no way that if a divorce is going to cost you less than 200 zuz for a betula or a mana for an almana, that this can be viewed as a marriage. You're basically sleeping with her out of the sanctity of marriage. Because, and that's why it's automatic that there is a ketuvah here. Because if you're going to leave it to Rabbi Yehuda, the Rabbi Yehuda, Amar ratza kotev lebetula shtel shtar shel matayim v'hi kotevet yitkebalti bimcha mana. There's nothing to prevent a guy from writing out a ketuvah that is normal. He writes the betula 200 says, and she signs off, I have received 100 of this in advance, so that way she could never sue for a ketuvah matayim. Or he could take an almana and he can write her 100, and she can write it kabalti mimcha 50 zuz. So that means, according to Rabbi Yehuda, there are ways around the ketuvah. And yet the Mishnah is saying, it doesn't matter what, she always gets 200 as a ketuvah and 100 as a mana. That seems to be Rabbi Meir Shita. But if that's the case, look at the continuation of the Mishnah. Ema Seifa. Katav la sadesh av amana tachat 200 zuz. If he writes a field, no. Wrong. You should have stopped while you were at least partially ahead. He writes her a field that's worth a mana and says, this is what you get. This is in place of Matayim Zuz, but it isn't worth Matayim Zuz. So the Mishnah comes along, even though he didn't write Lo Katav La, he didn't write the standard language of Kol Nechasim De'itli Arachrayin Varvayin L'Ketuvateich, nonetheless he's Chayev Shutz Nai Beit Din. Now, what that is saying is that a non-achrayut shtar nonetheless contains achrayut. Now the technical term for that is, we view achrayut as the ta'ut sofer, meaning if you have a shtar that does not say the standard language of ma'o mai nechasim ar mishu badim, nonetheless your nechasim are mishu badim, because not writing such a thing is so absurd that we view it as if it's a mistake of the sofer. He forgot to include it. But it's part and parcel of owning a shtar. But that's Rabbi Yehuda Shita, who argues on Rabbi Meir, and says that even if it's not written, it's as if it is written. He views Akrayut not being in a shtar as if it is in a shtar. That's what the Mishnah is saying. And we'll talk about later, maybe Iksuv is unique. We'll talk about that possibility. D'i Rabbi Meir, how could it be going like Rabbi Meir if Rabbi Meir holds, as I'll show you in a moment, Omar Akrayut loves Ta'ut Soferhu, that not writing in a shtar, the Chiyav of Akrayut, is viewed as a willful agreement to a sale in which, or a loan in which, I have no actual recourse to collect from something that had been sold. It's not. Where do we see this machlokas? In an interesting situation, which somebody finds lying on the street. Matzash Tarechov, okay, finds bonds, $100,000, Reuven owns Shimon. He comes to Reuven and he says, you know, should I give this to Shimon? Did you pay it already? No, it's true. I owe him $100,000. Sure, give it to him. Must have fallen out of his pocket. Can he give it to Shimon? No. Not in yesh b'machrayut nechasim. Because consider a very simple scenario. Reuven has already paid Shimon. Shimon, in desperate need of funds, comes to Reuven and says, listen, you still have that shtar of the debt that you once paid me? Yeah. Okay, I got a little bit of an idea. I sold a piece of property. I don't need money badly. Why don't you give me back that shtar? I will then, you'll sue me. I mean, I'll sue you. And now what will happen is I'll be able to collect the field that you sold. We'll split it. And there won't be any money out of you. You don't have any money anyway to pay me. We'll just take it from the guy that bought your field. What do you say? So how can we, just because Shimon has agreed, or Reuven has agreed, they owe Shimon money, we don't know that that's true. So how can you return the shtar now if he might use it? Because the Beis Din will use this to collect the field that he had already sold. So therefore, you gotta keep it. But if ein be'em achrayim nechasim, if it doesn't say in it, kol nechasai are mishubadim v'arba'im, so then you can give it back to him, as long as, at least this is one way of understanding the Mishnah. But there's another approach, but Rashi, this is Rabbi Yochanan's approach, which Rashi takes here. So Yachzir she'ein beit din Ephraim, since Beis Din anyway can't use it for collection, so what is it worth? It's not worth anything. Ella, he's agreeing it's worth to collect from me. Fine. You want to have your money taken away from you, and you agree that you owe it. Fine. We'll give it back to collect. It can't hurt anybody else. Give it Rabbi Meir. So according to Rabbi Meir, if the shtar doesn't include the words Nechasai or Arvayim, then they're not. Whereas the Chachamim only, the Chachamim include the Bar Plukta of Rabbi Meir's Rabbi Yehuda. And if that's the case, the Chachamim only Nechasai lo Yachzir Shebeit Din Ephraim. So you see that according to the Chachamim, including Rabbi Yehuda, Achrayut is viewed as a Ta'ut Sofer, and even though it doesn't appear in the shtar, it's as if it appeared in the shtar, and you can collect from a field that Reuven had already sold, and therefore you have no right to return it to Shimon to collect. So how does this make sense? Says the Gemara, Reisha, Rabbi Meir, the Reisha of the Mishnah that says that no matter what, Ektuvah is always Batayim Umaneh, that's Rabbi Meir's Shita. V'seifa Rabbi Yehuda, and the Seif is going to leave the Rabbi Yehuda, who views Achrayut as a Ta'ut Sofer against Rabbi Meir. Maybe you'll try to tell me, well, I guess it's this unique case. I mean, maybe by virtue of its being a Tanai Beit Din, so too is the lien a Tanai Beit Din. And maybe by a Ketuvah, even Rabbi Meir would agree that you don't have to write that it's Kol Nechasai Ar Mishubadim. Maybe a case of a Ketuvah is automatically the equivalent of a Ta'ut Sofer. The Shiny Leila Rabbi Meir, Ben Ketuvah, the Shtar. Maybe Rabbi Meir would agree by a ketuvah that it's not like a shtar of a milveh. When it comes to a loan, ein achinami, a person has to write in the shtar that he intends to create a lien. But otherwise, there's no lien. But by a ketuvah, the Beis Din insists that there is a lien. But that's not true. Umi shiny leg. Do we, in fact, are we able to get away with saying that according to Rabbi Meir, when it comes to a ketuvah without achrayut nechasim, that you have nonetheless the ability to collect? V'yatanya, does it not say in the Braita, according to Rabbi Meir, that chamisha govin min ha-mechurarin, there are five people that can be gove only from the chasim b'nei chorin, the chasim that have not been sold, but not that have been sold, meaning that there is no achrayut over here, no lien on the nefasim, v'eluhin, and they are as follows, perot, v'shevach perot. So this is a case where you've got somebody who stole a field, and he sells it. The owner's disappeared. He forges. It's something that happens in this country all the time. You end up, you buy a deer, and it turns out it belongs to somebody else. So now, meanwhile, you have invested in that deer, and you've already put in a whole new air conditioning unit and so on and so forth. Anyway, the owner arrives, takes the deer back from you in court, and tells you to go bang your head against the wall. You had no right to do anything to his home. And you can talk to the guy who sold it to you. You go back to the guy who sold it to you, and he has got, indeed, a lot of other deers that he's selling, you know, some of which actually belong to him. Now, some of these guys do have some deers that belong to him. So now the question is, when you collect the money for the sale, can you also collect from the guy the money for the air conditioning unit that you installed? Or if it were a field and there would be fruit that had been growing already and that I had invested in, he walks off with the field and tells you to keep off his property and collects all those perot. Can you get that back from the guy who sold you the field illegally? Sure you can. But if the only way to get it back is from another deer that the guy sold, and he doesn't have any other deers that are his, and now you want to say, but I had a lien because of my sale before you bought your deer from him, which was one of his rare legal sales, then you cannot collect with the rights of collection more than the value of the home that you purchased. So the air conditioning unit, you're going to have to go after him and try to get him to pay you from something else. He's got a bank account or whatever, but you can't get it from something that he already sold to somebody else. Now, the reason for this is an obvious takanat hashuk. Because what would happen is that any person who had ever once sold a piece of property, nobody would be willing to buy another piece of property from him ever. Because since I don't know how much a guy has invested in the property that he bought, so let's say I know that he sold the property for $100,000. So like this, I could say, all right, I don't mind buying another piece of property from him for $100,000 because he's got other things worth $100,000. But if I may have a suit against me now for a lot more than that, so I don't know how much, my place may be worth a lot more than that. He's going to now get a suit against him for maybe $3 million because they invested in that property. And now when the guy came and took it back, I don't know that it was his. Maybe he had stolen it. Then they're going to come after me for the whole thing. Take a lot more than what this guy had paid. My property was worth $3 million. Maybe they'll take the whole thing away. And then I'll come back and he's only got $100,000 left. So therefore, it's just not worth it for me. So obviously, you're going to wreck the real estate market if you have something that there's no way of knowing in advance. It's called davar she'ein lo kitzba. I have no way of knowing what it's going to cost me, and therefore no way of knowing that I've got title insurance that I can rely on. I'm not going to buy it. As simple as that. That was the same logic that we spoke about in terms of mizonot of an almana. If she's going to be able to go after a buyer, who's going to buy it? But I'm going to have to support this guy's widow for the rest of his life, rest of her life, out of the property that I bought? Meshuggah. What do I need this sorrow for? So therefore, in cases where there's no predefined limit, I cannot provide liens to be torif min alakuchos, to take it out of the hands of somebody who had bought it. You know what? Maybe I'll go to sleep. And you start talking.
It doesn't help.
You do a very good job.
It doesn't help us, really.
No?
It's an application for a buyer of real estate to know that he didn't pay his wife to her.
Because you know how much the ketuvah is worth, because it's a shtar. What? Ask, ask. Don't jiggle around. What are you asking? I can tell you what the value of the ketuvah is, and therefore, when I buy something from you, I'm going to look. I'm going to say, does this guy have other property? Yes. How much? Enough to cover the ketuvah that he owes? Okay, then I'm safe. Because even if he sells this other property, that lien came later than my purchase. Because it was the lien moved onto the last piece of property that you have. If the last piece of property that you have is enough to cover what is liened against you, then I'm free and clear.
What about borrowed money against
the other? The borrowed money, unless it's in a contract, doesn't matter. And because he can't collect from me. There's no lien on borrowed money unless it's contractual. If it's contractual, then I'll know about it. That's the whole point of achrayut, is because if it's in a contract, then it has a call. It's traceable. Yeah, that's the whole point. Anything that is written has a call, and I can find out. But that's why if it's not written, or if it has no kitzban, there's no way to know in advance, you're right. If there's no way to protect myself, I'd be silly to buy. And that's exactly why we make this takana. So perot, shevach perot, another case where it's endless, is somebody who gets married to a woman who has children, and he accepts upon himself Lazun et ben ishto bat ishto. He's going to provide for his stepchildren. How the heck do I know how much money that's going to be? Therefore, it can't be collected from the chasim that have already been sold. You can't be torif min alakuchot. You can only collect min hamechurarim. That means I collect from real estate, but real estate that's free and clear. It's the equivalent of collecting from a talmid. So that's the third case. Then a get chov she'ein bo achrayut. A shtar on a debt that does not say that it is a lien against the property. Now, this could only be going to Libra Rabbi Meir, right? Because according to Rabbi Yudi, even if it doesn't say there's a lien, there is a lien. And then it says, Uktuvat isha she'en ba'achrayut. That the same thing is true about a ktuvah that doesn't say, Kone chasai ar mishubadim and arvaim. That's Rabbi Meir. Man shabat le diom achrayut lafto it sofer. Who is the author of that shita? That it's got to be written or it doesn't count. That's Rabbi Meir. And it says, Beferish, right here up against the Shtar Chov, that doesn't have Achrayut Nechasim, Uchtuvat Isha. So don't try to tell me there's a difference between a Shtar Chov and a Ktuvat Isha. According to Rabbi Meir, it's both the same. So now I'm back to my question. So the Mishnah is now split, half and half. First part is Rabbi Meir, who says you can't have less than 200 or 100. The second part is Rabbi Yehuda, who said, even though you didn't write the Chiyuv of Achrayut, it's automatic. Make up your mind. Says the Gemara, that's no problem, Bechalal. You made a lot of assumptions. He buys Saber Rabbi Meir, he buys Saber Rabbi Yehuda. I make it work either way. He buys Saber Rabbi Yehuda. What's the case? I understand how you're comparing it to Rabbi Yehuda. The case where Rabbi Yehuda was where you wrote a ketuvah, and she writes that I already received half of the ketuvah, right? Fine. In that case, it's true. Hatam katvale hit kabalti. But Rabbi Yehuda does not disagree with the fact that ketuvah is a tnai beidin, and that if there's nothing that says that it was paid, then it's automatically that it's a chiyuv. Where does Rabbi Yehuda say you can ignore the ketuvah totally? You can't ignore the ketuvah totally. He says if you write the ketuvah properly, then you can play games by having her say, I already got the money. But if you didn't write the ketuvah in the first place, Rabbi Yehuda agrees that there's a ketuvah there. So there's no connection to our Mishnah at all. Or, you know what, it's done to Rabbi Meir. Does it say in our Mishnah, chayav and gova min'a mishubati, gova min'a lukuchot? No, it says chayav. Chayav means min'a mishukharim. That's all. You jumped to the conclusion that since it says chayav, even though he had given her the field, and he didn't, chayav simply means he still owes her the money. And he can't say, look, I gave you this field to collect from. She says that field's only worth 100, it's not worth 200. So forget it. Lo katavla. How about if he didn't write that if you are captured, that's the standard language, if you are captured, I am going to ransom you and take you back as a wife. Now, obviously, that implies that he can take her back as a wife. It's a given. So what happened once is that Avuah de Shmuel said that an Eshet Yisrael shenamsa asura levala. Even an Eshet Yisrael who is raped is not allowed to go back to her husband. Why? It's all very nice to be raped, but the end result is that it's a lot of fun. It could be that you started off not wanting to be raped, but we're afraid that in the course of the relationship that she got turned on. At that point, she already might have enjoyed it. So maybe that's called leratzon. So therefore, we can't assume that she's muteret. According to you, the ketuvah makes no sense. The ketuvah writes, im tishtavoi, if you will be captured, afakinech, I will ransom you, v'otvinach liliintun, take you back as a wife. According to you, what do you mean? How can I take you back as a wife? Maybe she's a surly. Ishti. He didn't have what to say. Kori Rav alei de Avuah de Shmuel. So Rav himself said about Avuah de Shmuel, to be ishtik, I mean, come on, I barely touched him, you know. I hit him to see what he would say. I mean, but obviously, sarim atzru v'milim, look at this, noblemen, at a loss for words, v'chaf yasimu l'fiyam, and suddenly put their hands to their mouth with nothing to respond. Man, oh man, it was such an easy response. What was that, says the Gemara? What should he have said? He should have said, Bishvuya, he killed, obviously. I mean, we know all along, it's not as if Bishvuya was definitely raped. It's that we have a chash of Bishvuya, and we have the whole idea that an Isha was a nishbeis, he's been avela, that's been all business. We had a lot of reasons to be makil by Shvuya. Well, he should have told me. What a dumb question. I mean, there it's talking about Shvuya, and here it's talking about we have Aiden, that she was raped. There's no connection at all. Ask the Gemara, I understand. But according to Avuah de Shmuel, didn't the Torah say that a woman is muteres ba'inus? It says it's tzaka, the whole thing. Where do we see what would be the case of ones that the Torah would be mater? According to him, we always have a chashash. Maybe she was enjoying it. Only where you have witnesses who say that she kept screaming for help mitchila v'atzof. You're going to comrade him shetzavcha mitchila v'atzof. So there is a case, but what we're talking about is normally in a case of rape where we don't have witnesses that she was screaming for help the whole time. So then, in Achinami, we have to be chayish that she went along with the deal. And this psak of Avuah de Shmuel argues so profoundly with Rava, because Rava says, I don't care if she wanted it. I don't care if she begged for it. She still is considered to be an anus. The Amar Rava koshet chilata ba'ones v'sofo baratzon. As long as it started as a rape, even if at the end she is saying, please don't stop him. If he hadn't, I'd pay him. I would have rented him. It doesn't matter how desperate she is. So she obviously is very interested in this so-called rape. She still is muteris. It's the exact opposite of what she was. You never know. Maybe somewhere in there she was desirous of him. Here she's begging you to let him continue sleeping with her. And she's saying, I would have paid him. She's still muteris. My timer. Yetzer al-Bashah. Because once she's in that kind of position, she can't stop. Now that's considered to be itself an ones. So the fact, it's a remarkable thing, it's the fact that she could have resisted the chatchila, she did. But there comes a point where you can no longer resist your own desire. That's also called ones. So part of the rape was putting her in that kind of position. That's not called willing. That he wrapped her in desire, in yetzer. And having done that, she's now out of her mind, basically. She's not controllable. So if the person cannot control themselves, then they become... There's an interesting bit where Tzadok actually says he has a Kabbalah, but that was the pshat with Zimri. Why did Zimri hold it was mutter? Because Yetzer Albisha, he held he was an ones. He couldn't stop himself, so male is mutter. I don't understand the
question.
Yeah, she was raped, but she didn't move her eyes off. It's not again. Tanika Vosidu, and indeed we have a Raya like Rava. Vehi lo nitfasa asura. Here the Braita says, the Torah speaks about what happens to a woman in a case of a rape. So it says over there, if she was vehi lo nitfasa, so then she's asura on her husband. But that means, of course, since the Torah stresses vehi lo nitfasa, that had she been nitfasa, had she been actually raped, then muteret. But the implication is also that he lo nitfasa, dafka her, but yesh la acheret, you can have a different case where afa pisha lo nitfasa muteret, where even if she hadn't been raped, she is still muteret her husband. V'yezo zo, what might that be referring to in the pasuk? Any case where tchilata ba'ones v'sofa b'ratzon. So as long as the beginning of the rape was a rape. This is so unbelievably advanced. You understand? You walk into a modern court and you say, what are you talking about? The police came in and they tried to stop him. And she begged them to not to stop. I mean, there's some judge that's not going to say she was asking for it. She's before she's asking for it. Because she's asking for it even though she isn't asking for it, right? And over here, it's considered to be a rape anyway. Half of the fella. The depth of the insight. No, amazingly advanced over the cloud, even over contemporary law. So in this case, the Torah is specifically saying there are cases where even lo nitfasa, the current situation is that she's not being forced because the cops are here, and nonetheless she's muteret. Tanya Idach is another brisa that argues with a different understanding of the pasuk. Ve'yi lo nitfasa asura, ha nitfasa muteret. Only she would be muteret if she was actually raped. But that's only her. Yesh v'acheret, there's another case where even if she were raped, she would be asura. That's the opposite diyuk in the pasuk. In other words, there's two different diyukim over here. One, which is a diyuk on the direct, he lo nitfasa, and one which is the diyuk on the indirect, but if she was lo nitfasa, it's also he. So we have two different directions to be darish the pasuk. Not necessarily contradictory. V'yezu, zo eshet kohen. This refers to eshet kohen, where even if she were nitfasa, she would still be asura. Om Rav Yudam Rishmo Mishum Rav Yishmo Vehi lo nitfasa asura nitfasa muteret. Here we have a diak in the other direction, but not as Rava's diak, but rather Yesh l'cha acheret sh'afa pishalo nitfasa muteret. There is another case where even if it hadn't been a rape and she had gone along willingly, she would nonetheless be muteret her husband. What's the case? V'yezo zo shekidushe kidushe ta'ut. The halacha that I'm referring to over here is a case where the original Kedushin had been made with a tanai. Let's say that he had presented himself as a kohen, and she agreed to marrying him al menas that he's really a kohen. 10 years later, it turns out he wasn't a kohen at all. She walks away with her children, and she was never married. So by the same token, if she was mizana willingly, thinking that she's married to him, turned out she was never married. So she was having an affair with somebody else. Now she comes back a year later and she decides she likes the guy anyway. So she wants to get married to him now without any, okay, you're not a coin, you know what, I wasn't able to find anything better. I'll remarry you, or marry you really for the first time, technically. She's not asur. We all say, what do you mean? You were having an affair thinking you were thinking. What's thinking? But he loaned fasu muter. There's another case where even he loaned fasu muter, and that's the case over here, where at the time she was convinced that she was an Eishes Ish. But she wasn't an Eishes Ish. And that's the case of a Kedushin. It was a Kedushin Tot, where over there, Afilu, the halach is, Afilu benam murkava ktefa, she can have the baby in a snuggly. Mima enet valechet la. She could say goodbye, and walk away because she was never married.
Well, you deserve that, sir. I mean, she's not exactly like good marriage material.
You can decide not to marry her, but why should we ask her?
She divorce her immediately if she does this and this and this and all that.
You don't have to divorce her. She was never married to you.
She comes back, that becomes a...
That's a psychological problem. That's a philosophical problem, but it's not a halakhic problem.
When she comes back to him, then that becomes a real issue.
Well, the next time she better not carry on.
She can't do it again after this time.
You know, she can't do it again. This is a one time off.
Does he have responsibility for the children?
Do you have your responsibility of children out of wedlock? You don't even have a responsibility of children in wedlock. Omer Rav Yehuda, Hani Nashi, the Ganvu Ganvi, Sharyan Leguvrayu, women that have been captured by the mafia, or by Ganavim, are mutter to their husbands. Omer Rabbanon Rav Yehuda, Vakom Mamtin Lahu Nahama. How can you say that? They become basically... committed to them, they cook for them, they make them French toast in the morning, and you're saying that they're viewed as being victims of rape? No, that's machmas yira. That's basically that's happening to them because they're terrified, so they're trying to be nice. What do you mean? But they pass them the bullets to shoot up the banks. I mean, that doesn't look like that. No, that's also that's machmas yira. But one thing, vaday shafkinan va'azvan minafshayu. However, the Kool-Aid acid test over here is that if they are released and they don't go home, they go back to the Ganovim, then already that we don't view as machmas yira. Despite the fact that there's a tzad to say that at this point they're already, their minds have been warped until they can't think like Patty Hearst. Nonetheless, that's the test. If even when the pressure...
That's really
a nice one. I mean, oh, God, I've got a nice picture. All right, so over there you'd say maybe that's also called machmas yira. That's not called machmas yira anymore. At that point, they become asuras. So that would be the test. Ton rabbon shvuyei malchut harein kishvuyin gnuve harein kishvuyin. Sorry, gnuve. The question over here is we have a level of a shvuyei of a listim. Listim is already a mafia kind of guy. And he works in the open. And Shvuyei Malchus is where the king takes a woman to become part of his harem. Oh, like Esther. We're going to talk about Esther herself in a moment. Yeah. So Shvuyei Malchus has a din of Shvuyim, but Gnuvei Listot Einon Kishvuyim. However, those who stick around with people who work in the open are not considered to be Shvuyas. Latanya Ipcha, it says there's a price, it's just the opposite. It's not a problem. Malchus a Malchus Lokasha. We have to define our terms. Malchut HaKashverosh. I mean, you can have a Malchus that's like Malchut HaKashverosh, where over there we know perfectly well that those are real Shvuyim. She knows she's never ever going to end up as his real wife. And therefore, if she sticks around, there's no tzad to say that she was looking to stick around and to end up being the queen. How could that happen? It's HaKashverosh. So over there, we understand that it's considered to be an ones. There's no tzad that she would have gone along with such a thing. That's that type of malchus. But there's also a malchus like Malchus ben Netzar. Malchus ben Netzar over there, he's just basically a high-class mafia guy. The only thing is that he was strong enough to actually capture whole towns and take them over. It's like a pirate. Actually, he was the one that destroyed the Jewish community in Alexandria at one point. There's all discussion who this is. The Ramban brings a pshat that maybe Ben Netzer is actually Nebuchadnezzar. But he has a completely opposite pirish on the Gemara. He says because Nebuchadnezzar wouldn't take married women. Akashverosh would take married women. So all she had to do to get out was to say that she's married. Okay, that's opposite approach to Rashi. So here, according to Rashi, Ben Netzer is like a low-class kind of guy who was able to go ahead and capture towns. And over there it says Shvuyei Malchut are not considered to be Shvuyin. Why? Because under those circumstances, she's hoping that she can really become number one. So there where she sticks around, we attribute it to a desire to actually find favor in his eyes and ultimately maybe be married to him. So that's the difference between Malchus. Listut, alistut lokashim. There's also two different types of listim. One is a listim of Ben Netzar, and one is a regular listim. Later on, the Gemara is going to ask, make up your mind, is he a listim or is he a melech? I mean, we're using the same word, we're saying Ben Netzar is included in one. But a haba Ben Netzar and a haba listim the alma. So listim the alma, I mean, no woman is going to be one. He will mistreat a woman anyway. Ben Netzar had all types of errors about him, that he was actually a nobleman, like the noble pirate. He's not just stam a pirate who's going to mistreat his women. He's a high-class pirate. And therefore, there's a tzad to say that maybe I would be well-treated with him. But the stam the pirate, nobody would want to stick with him. Wait a minute. Make up your mind. This Ben Netzar. I mean, is he a melech or is he a listim? Alatam kari le melech, v'alke kari le listim. How can you use the same guy as an example for two contradictory clauses? It's not a problem. Gabi Achashverosh, he's a listim. Gabi listim, the alma, he's a melech. So he has elements in him of both. That's it. You want to leave so early?
That seems like a good stopping place for you. That's fine. Then I can open up again.
Open up. Omer Abayi. Almanala Kohen Gadol, we said over here that the Yisrael writes, I will ransom you and take you back as a wife. A Kohen writes, I will ransom you and send you back to where you came from. So Omer Abayi, Almanala Kohen Gadol, a guy who marries, a Kohen Gadol marries someone who is not Uyatim. The din is that she still nonetheless has a ketuvah, as we'll see later on. And that means she also has Yitznaya ketuvah, which includes the chiyuv to ransom her. So now, the question over here is whether he's chayev to be po to her. Is this fit the language of its nice? It does, says Abai. Because Shani Koreba, I still can read on this woman and apply to her the clause in the Mishnah that says, Ubi Kohenet. All he has to write is, I will ransom you for Kaneh, and Adunech Limidinateh. Can he not send her back home? He can. So what does it say over here that she had to be Ruyat to him in the first place? At this point, he's not going to be taking her back anyway. Even if she were mutaris to him, he's going to be sending her home. He can send her home. And therefore, over here, says Abaya, this Tanaya Ketuvah certainly is applicable. Other Tanaya Ketuvah, which are things that have to do with his fiat for an ongoing relationship, such as Mizonot, which includes Refuah, that not. But this, yes. However, a Mamzeret, or Netinali Yisrael, since he cannot take her back, because he couldn't take her back, and I couldn't have her in the first place. So how could we be Mekayim the Tanai in which he says, and I will retake you as a wife? So therefore, I know Chayav Lifdota, because the Tanai in the Ketuvah reads, V'otvinet le'liintu. I will ransom you and take you as my wife, but here, inani koreba v'otvinat le'liintu, I can't apply that Tanai Ketuvah. So therefore, the Tanai Ketuvah itself, its language, defines its applicability to these kind of cases. Whereas Rava Amar Rava says, no, wait. I agree with you when it comes to the Mamzeret and the Tina. But the question over here is, when he's writing those words, I will take you back, is it a reference to the general situation? Or is it a reference to the situation now that you have been captured? The result of the fact that you were captured is that I can no longer take you as my wife. So therefore, I'm saying like this. If the thing that made her Osir is the fact that she was captured, that would be where she's not an Almona Lekohen Gadol. She's a regular Isha Lekohen. And now she was captured. Now she's not Ruwiya for him anymore. Okay? That's why we inserted the language that even though I cannot have you as a wife, I will still be po to you and I will send you back to where you come from. That's the meaning of the Tanai. But in a case where she was anyway Asura, the Tanai of the Ksuva of the Kohen is not innately different than the Tanai of the Ksuva of the Yisrael. We see that we write by the Yisrael that she has to be Ruwiya of the Isha. So what he's saying is that I'm extending that Ruwiya Leisha, that even after you're captured, I will treat you bad. So now you're going to tell me, but since we had the right at Tanai when it came to Kohen, to cover the fact that she would be Asura Machmas, the fact that she was captured. So therefore that cancels the basic assumption that she has to be Ruwiya the way she would have been as Yisrael. That's absurd. It's not meant to be applied without brains. This is a special case of the normal din of Shavuot, which the Yisrael has. And therefore, if the only reason why we're now changing the language is to cover the Isser of Shvuya, fine, then he's chayav. But Isser Davar Acher Goreim La, in a case where the Amon of the Kohen Gadol is the equivalent of a Mamzer Yisrael, Mamzer Yisrael. So why should that be any different? So if it's a Davar Acher Goreim La, Eino Chayav Lifdota. Just want to get into that. No, no, not